We spoke last time about, you know, the title for the two sessions was involving our third partner, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the parenting process. Last time we spoke more about the actual involvement of Hashem in the whole deal from many different angles, bringing him more into the family, bringing him more into our lives, bringing him more into our children's lives. But today I'd like to discuss parenting using his advice. Believe it or not, he wrote the book on parenting. He actually wrote the book on life. And it's all there. The wisdom between our Torah Shebichsav, including our Tanakh, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, Torah Shebaal Peh, all the Shas and the Drashim, the later Meforshim throughout the generations. We have an extensive volumes and volumes on parenting. I don't think it was necessarily organized so we could just pick up the parenting session, but the information is there, and I'm sure today, with all of the resources available technologically, that a lot of it has been codified or collected and put together in one place. But let's draw a little bit about this divine wisdom that's relevant and helpful in the process of parenting. Just so happens that parsha that we just read, Parshas Pinchas, has maybe one of the most important messages. It's a message about leadership, but parents are in leadership roles, and they should realize it, and they should rise to the occasion. Moshe Rabbeinu is informed that he's about to pass on, and he has a short list of four items on his request for successor. The first thing he says, Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, Yifkoid Hashem elekei haruchos lechol bosor ish al ha'edo. Hashem, the God of the spirits of all flesh, should appoint a leader for this congregation. And Rashi's bothered by elekei haruchos lechol bosor. What kind of a language? Hashem should appoint a person. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah was Rabbeinu Shalom. Golui v'yodua, that each individual is different. Appoint a leader, sheyuchal lizbol kol echod ve'echod lefi datoi, who can tolerate each one according to his own individuality. And that is a critical, maybe the most critical ingredient in leadership, and I dare say in parenting too. Because our children are individuals. Individuals are different. Keshem she'em partsofeim doim ezoi lezoi, kachein deoseim. Just like their faces don't look alike. Even identical twins. I have identical twins, and you can tell the difference, but I must admit that in the early days, there was a tkufa where I could only tell the difference when I would look at them both together and say, which one looks more like Osher Shapansky? That was the way I was able to tell the difference. But anyway, but Lamai said, there's a difference. There is a difference. Everyone is different. Certainly in their dais, in their thinking, in their mitzvahs, in their personality, they're all different. And therefore, one size fits none. And unfortunately, we live in a society which is trying to sell us on just the opposite. One size fits all. And it's just not true. So the first thing we have to realize is that every child is different. Because this worked for one, that doesn't mean that's going to work for other. Because this one is responsive to one thing, that doesn't mean this one could tolerate it altogether. And everyone is different. And the difficulty is, and Rashi uses the language, lizboil. It's much easier to lump everyone together. That's it. This is the way we do it. Everyone's the same. It doesn't work. It's a sevel. It's difficult. It's painful. But we have to do it. If we wish for our children to flourish according to who they are, then we have to nurture them according to their own individuality. certain kids have certain needs, certain kids have certain weaknesses, certain kids have certain strengths. The difficulty sometimes comes and you deal each one differently, so then there's some jealousy, there's competition, why do you deal with them, why this, why that, and you have to do a lot of explaining, that's true. And it's much easier just to say, this is it, and forget it. But it doesn't work. Making everyone fit the same mold is like taking a square peg and trying to fit it into a round hole. Something breaks. Doesn't work. So this is point number one. This is advice for parenting. Every child is different. Some may have to go to a different yeshiva. Some may have to have a different attitude. Some may have to look a little different, wear a little different clothing. And the truth of the matter is, the more we allow for differences in the early ages, the less different they become as they get older. They don't have the need to express radical, almost deviant individuality, because I've always been an individual. You know, that's very, very, very important. And I don't think it could be emphasized enough. I think that also we have to know that, and I think I mentioned this in passing, but it's very critical as advice. Love validates. Validation is the most important thing, and making a child feel good about him or herself. Osher, the sherish of the word, is Ishur, validation. Love validates. Parental love is limited in its validating powers. Because the fact that my mother loves me is not so indicative of my own greatness, because she's pre-programmed. She's my mother. It's genetic. Or, forgive me, some would say it's selfish. So it doesn't necessarily speak about my own greatness and make me feel good about myself. Parental respect makes a child soar. Why does my parent respect me? Why they ask my opinion? Why they respect my time? Why don't they snap their fingers at the earliest age and tell me, you must come to the dinner table this second? Wow, they have respect for my time. They realize that when I'm dealing with my Lego over here, I am building the Empire State Building and not just playing kiddie games. And they have respect for that. You must take a bath this minute. I'm not in the mood. They respect my moods. They respect my time, my space. I'm busy. My individuality. Respect of a parent validates more than love. Because there's no rational reason why I should respect my child other than he or she is worthy. And that sends the message of my worthiness. That validates me. And then the influence that a parent has because of that is untold. So I think it's another point that's very, very important to keep in mind. Chazal let us know about pressure, how devastating pressure is. The Ramban tells us, a very interesting posuk. The posuk says in Tilim, Kuf Lamed, with you, Hashem, is forgiveness in order that you be feared. And the Ramban is concerned, the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Dvorim, in Hakdoma, like before, there's a psicha there, is concerned, like, because you forgive, that's why you're feared? If anything, the more forgiving a person is, the less the person is feared. The more not forgiving the person is, the individual is, then the more we fear. So it seems from the Ramban that the Pshat is as follows. If we didn't know that Hashem was forgiving, the pressure of the threat, the pressure, the punishment, the absolute imperative, I must, would be so overwhelming that we'd become paralyzed. We couldn't even fear. We couldn't even do what we have to do. The fear is overwhelming. And therefore, I just close out, I block it out, I run away, I hide under the bed. But ki imcho haslicho, when I know how forgiving you are, then I can truly fear. The Torah tells us, ish imoy ve'oviv tiro, And Rashi points out, brings from Chazal, that when it says about fear of a parent, it says the mother first, because the fear most normally is to the father, the one who's, things may be different. Maybe mothers are very strong too. But, you know, in the olden days, that was, the father was the figure that we were afraid of, and the mother was the, I think it's still that way. I just said that maybe in case, you know, whatever. Anyway, but Lemaisa, so we want that fear. That fear is good. It's not talking about fear, but a respect, a awe, a reverence that only comes ki imcha haslicha. Forgiveness is not a weakness. It's a necessity to allow our children not to become paralyzed with the pressure. Religious pressure is paralyzing. Parental pressure is paralyzing. But what I know, yes, there's pressure, but forgiving. There's alternatives. If I make a mistake, it's not the worst thing in the world. We could pick up the pieces. I won't be punished. I won't be embarrassed. I won't be attacked. I may not even be criticized. This is a whole different world. And that really is a powerful tool. When we know the extent of the sensitivity and the forgiveness, that's when the reverence comes. And when we put pressure, you know, religious pressure, by the way, I think we have to understand that. Parental pressure is very, very painful. And so is religious pressure. Sometimes that people who can't take pressure and can't take responsibility under pressure, we advise them, get a job. Work is somewhat therapeutic when it comes to pressure. Why? Because if I fail, I get fired, I'll find another job. It's not the end of the world. If I don't succeed with my parents, where am I going to go? Parental pressure is, there's no place else. There's no place to run. If I don't succeed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, religious pressure, then where am I going to go? Those pressures are enormous, and we have to understand them and soften them as much as possible. And when we show this kindness, this forgiveness, this benevolence, this sensitivity, this willingness to work with their mistakes, with their shortcomings, this refusal to berate and refusal to put down and refusal to embarrass, and not only not the individual, but even the act. The best time to talk about an act that was inappropriate is not when it happens. Chazal tells us, Al teratze odom b'shas kaso. Don't appease a person at the time of his anger, because you're not going to succeed. You're wasting your efforts. He's not receptive. On the other hand, at a different time, there's a conversation. And the conversation is better in the abstract. I'm not talking about you to you. I'll pick it up. He'll pick it up. She'll pick it up. That's important. But it's a concept. It's a teaching moment. I love to say, you know, the English language is not root-based. Many of the words, most of the words are arbitrary. Loshon Kodesh is root-based. If the word osher means a high level of happiness, it's because the shirish of the word is yeshur validation. Loshon Kodesh, English is not so. But I do believe that in certain words, there are very, very indicative meanings. Discipline. What would you say the basis, the shirish, if you will, the root of the word discipline is? Disciple. Discipline is about teaching, not about controlling, not about making a person feel bad about something. If the feeling bad or the feeling guilt is going to deny the teaching moment, because since you're making me feel so guilty, I don't want to pay attention. I want to deny it. I want to hide from it. I want to pretend that it's not true. So it didn't accomplish the disciple effect. And that's really what the discipline is. That's the only thing that allows discipline for the next time, because I learned a lesson. Not the painful, hard lesson that allows me to deny. We wonder sometimes, I punish the kid so much and he goes and does it again. Punishment doesn't do it. Teaching. The yisurim that we have, min hashamayim, what is it? Liaser is to reprimand. Their reprimands, their lessons. Yisurim boy no love, what do Chazal tell us? Yefashvish b'masov. We should look and see. It's an eye-opener to see, to correct things. And this has to be the chinuch process too. But anyway, the pressure is just enormous. We must cut down on that pressure because we can destroy them. Now, one of the ways to reduce pressure, and we find that in Chazal, is to explain why it's necessary to do that which we feel is important for them to do. Whether it's something religious, a mitzvah, whether it's a house rule, whether it's a family custom or preference that we have, why is this important? And if we can't answer the question why, then we have created a pressure, and pressure creates, what does every pressure create? Resistance. And we've created resistance, and resistance is the last thing you need if you wish to influence your children. And explaining things, I'm not sure if I mentioned here last time, because I know I mentioned it recently, but I talk a lot, too much. Anyway, so the Ralbag says, if you wish to convince a loved one, that's our children, of something that's bitzar u muzar, painful and strange, don't tell them what it is until you told them the benefit. And the benefit, the cheshek for the benefit, will mitigate the strangeness and the pain. And if you say, well, come on, that's not for our kids. Where do we learn it from? From Avraham Avinu with the Bris Milah. Hashem did not tell Avraham Avinu that the covenant that he has to enter with him has to do with an operation. He says, you enter into this covenant with me and you're going to have Eretz Yisroel and generations come forth. And only then did he hand him a knife. And it could have influenced Avraham Avinu. Had he handed him the knife, and even before he cut, he told him, these are the benefits, it wouldn't have been the same thing. First, the benefits. If we have rules, they should be explained. There's logic for our rules, and if there's no logic for our rules, then they should be erased immediately. What are they there for? Oh, just on principle? Oh, just because everybody else is doing it? Oh, just to bring this whippersnapper, I don't know if you use that word anymore, under control? They're there for a purpose. If the purpose isn't safety, if the purpose isn't menschlichkeit, if the purpose isn't midas, if the purpose isn't health, if the purpose isn't whatever good purpose there could be, then what is it all about? Very important. And we shouldn't feel threatened to explain it. We shouldn't be afraid to explain it. But we should make sure we know how to explain it. And if we don't, we have to reconsider, because very bad. And the Torah's rules are the same thing. When the kids ask, why do I have to do this? Why can't I do this? It needs an answer. Sometimes the answer could be, I don't know. But it should always be followed by the next sentence, but I will try to find out. I will ask, I will look, I'll research, but I won't ignore your question. Ignoring a question is terribly invalidating because I can't even ask a good question. I really want an answer. And even if the question seems to be to us some type of a camouflage and excuse, till you get to the real issue, you also have to take away the protective shields that the people are putting up just to protect themselves, just to cover themselves, just to pretend that these are the issues. So we must be able to answer questions. Yes?
Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
I'm talking about younger children. 7, 8, 9, and down. Today's day and age, they tend, I think, as part of the entitlement era a little bit, they tend to ask out of defiance a little bit. Why do I have to put on my seatbelt? Why do I have to sit here in the carpool? Is there room for not authoritative, obviously with love and with a respect to a human being, but is there room to answer, it's better, you need to sit here? Because the more you answer, the more you want to
Well, question. I think you have to do both. Listen, this is the way it has to be, but I'll be very happy to explain it to you. Or maybe you'll say like this, listen, I'm going to explain it to you, but ultimately, it's a matter of safety, it's a matter of whatever, and it has to be that way. But the explanation is so important. You see, a little bit in interpreting what you're saying, not necessarily that you're saying this. No, that's the wrong word. using what you're saying as an excuse to make another point. Okay?
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with you. All right? And that is that we're a little bit threatened by our children. We're afraid of them. We are. We're afraid of arguments because I have no patience or time for argument. You know, I'm busy. You sit around, kid, all day, play, you know. And even when you go to school, I'm not sure what you're doing there. But I may work at this. I have the house. I have other children. I got a husband. Come on. That's number one. And number two, there's something else that we oftentimes were afraid of what the consequences might be. You know, today, our children have a weapon that they never had in Jewish history. I mean, they had it, but they didn't know they had it. You don't like what I'm doing? I'm going off the derech. They threatened little kids, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-olds, I know, threaten that. Yeah, I'm going off the derech. And they have precedents, too. You know, they've seen it. So we're very nervous. We're threatened, we're scared, we're worried. Don't be so worried. Be confident, you know. This is the way it has to be. And the more you show sensitivity and softness, it's firm and soft. I think that's the formula. Firmness is necessary. The kids need firmness. They need structure. They beg for it. I'll never forget Dr. Pelkovitz tells a story how he was working with this family and with this kid, and the kid was so oppositional and everything and isn't trying to get the family to take a stance against this kid. And finally, he got them in a session together to really stand up for something. And as they're walking out, he overhears the kid mumbling to himself, "It's about time that my parents stood up for something. They want it. They need it. They crave for it. But it has to be done not with a sinister smile, with a smile and with sensitivity and with knowledge of the fact that they need to understand it. The more they understand it, the more it will be easy for them to do. Now, it's true. If it's only understanding, so they'll say, listen, you understand your way, I understand my way. You know, I think it this way, you think that. No, it's not a matter of opinion. This is the way it has to be. When it's halacha, it's halacha. When it's safety, it's safety. It's not for either of us to decide what's safe or not. There's statistics, there's precedents, there's reports, everybody knows what goes on in the world. But it's firm, but it's gentle and kind and caring and sensitive and answering questions, and we need that. And you'll find that the more you answer their questions, the more they get used to you answering the questions, the less questions they're going to ask. The reason they ask more is because they're not used to answers, so you finally give an answer, you explain, it keeps on going. Anyway, I think that's a good point, but a worthwhile piece of advice. Okay, let's continue some other things. Some things that are obvious. Chazal tell us, k'shoit atzmocho v'achar kach k'shoit acherim. There's minimal, if any, and maybe negative credibility when we expect things from our children more than we expect from ourselves. And we as parents, unfortunately, sometimes may be guilty of that. You know, the older generation has a little bit more savvy. In Yiddish they say, you know, we can figure out, yeah, you do this, you do that. Kids are very straight. And if we, in their eyes, compromise that straightness, we've created the ultimate parental monster. And I would name the ultimate parental monster the hypocrite. If in their eyes there's a hypocrite, it's all over. The do as I say, not as I do dictum never worked. And today, worse than ever. There's no such thing. That may have worked a little bit in a generation where people couldn't really do whatever they want anyway. But today, I do whatever I want. I'm free. And you have no clue what I'm doing. You don't know what I do in my room when the door is closed. You don't know what I do on the computer. You don't know what I do on the phone. You don't know what... It used to be, if you called from a telephone, we could know where you're calling from. You know, the parents say, oh, I'm just around the corner. Around the corner, you went to, you know what I mean? We know, look, why does it say, why does it say police station? You know what I mean? Like we know where you are. Today, you don't know where I am, you know. I can even call it from a false number. These kids are very savvy, you know, like that. So they could have so much to do. We have to be very, very careful on how we deal with them so that there's no need, there's no desire, that more and more we respect them, we work with them, they feel this benevolence, they feel this love. And I have to tell you about parental love. Not only is it not as validating because of the fact that we're pre-programmed, but today, and you don't have to accept this, but I say if you don't, it's at your own risk. Kids, go back to my generation a little bit, you know, before your generation. My generation, I know personally and my friends, we believe that our parents lived for their children. Lived for their children. That was their whole life. Today, if you'll ask the average kid, do you feel your parents live for their children? They will tell you, I just wish they would let me live. They don't believe that they live for their children. So we can't take it for granted. They have to know how much we love them. Even if with its limited validating powers, we have to say it. And not the kind of forgive me, can't wait to get you off the phone. Love you! Doesn't mean anything. It's like writing love at the end of a business letter. It's the wrong word, it's the wrong time. It doesn't mean anything. Unless it's in a context. It's expressed in words. It's expressed in facial expression. It's expressed in body language. It's expressed in every possible which way. And they need it because today they are not confident in their parents' love. And in a certain sense, you can't blame them. They're always busy, you know. The biggest joke is they're always going to parenting classes instead of staying home with the kids. Okay, that's not relevant at this time of day, and you know, hopefully kids have what to do. But I'm just saying, so, but they need that. They need it. That communication is critical. Okay, let's talk for a few moments about some other things. You know, people talk about spending quality time with children. Very nice. Very true. But we also have to spend time with our children. Quality time is not enough. And when we have larger families, it becomes a bigger challenge. Because a lot of the families and a lot of the family dynamic, spending time with a few together doesn't really do it. The different issues, different levels, different age groups, different interests, different, you know, so it's a big challenge. But it's a challenge that we have to step up to the plate. If we don't invest the time, the focus, the interest, we may suffer the consequences later on in life. Now, don't smother them and don't force them into spending time with you. But if we do it in a way that it's mutual. We look forward to spending time with them. They look forward to spending time with us. And it's real, and it's time. It's quality, but it's also quantity. And it's focus. And the biggest enemy to the time I spend with my children is, well, that's right. I would just take one step broader and say all of the distractions. This is the major one, but there are other distractions too. I remember in the olden days once, I came home and the kids were home and I was looking at the mail and looking at something and one kid tugs on my sleeve and says, a terrible thing happened today in school. And I, of course, wasn't paying attention. So I said, oh, I'm so happy for you. The kid says, pay attention, you know, that's essential. Anyway, a few minutes later, a kid says, a great thing happened in school today. And I wasn't going to make the same mistake again. And I says, oh, I feel so bad for you. Pay attention. This is your most precious possession. This is your nitzchius. This is your eternity is right there. We don't live forever. This is how we live on in the future generations. You have to pay attention and give it so much attention, so much time, so much effort, so much love. I'd like to mention something else, though. You know, there's a very let's put it this way. When the Torah tells us about loving Hashem, it mentions b'chol levavcha, with all your heart, b'chol nafshecha, even with your life, u'v'chol me'idecha, and with your money, and that's mentioned last. In our society today, there's a terrible nisoyon, there's a terrible habit that people have. We express our love with our money. And we don't realize that expressing love with money is an inverse negative expression. Because what it says to me, I'm worth a couple of bucks, but I'm not worth your heart. I'm not worth your soul. I'm not worth your time. I'm not worth so many other efforts and involvements that I'd like to see from you. I have to be very, very careful. There's a great tendency today to emphasize the, you know, and parents say, what do you mean your kid is so disappointed? What do you mean? Do you know how much money I gave him? I have a kid who comes to see me, has issues, who has a credit card which has no maximum on it. And he spends it, he travels, he goes, he does, he comes, does anything and everything. And he wishes, well, maybe, he wishes he had a parent. He does, but, you know, he wishes instead of a credit card, he wishes he had a father. Terrible, terrible thing. It's so easy to make that mistake. And we are busy, and we are overwhelmed, and we, but it's something that's, now, there's something else which I think is important. Ultimately, parents, and this is really the father in the primary role, are responsible for the Torah study, learning, teaching, and the chinuch, in the technical sense, of our children. Interesting, the Rabbeinu Yonah writes that on the Pasuk, Koisomer al Beis Yaakov v'sagi l'bnei Yisrael, the Torah was first given to the women and then to the men. And he says, why? Everybody gives different reasons. And he says the reason is because the earliest stages, the formative years, a child is more with the mother than the father. And that's when the midos are implanted and refined. The honesty, the sensitivity, the kindness, the patience, these basic character traits. And those are the most critical for the Torah to survive in this child as he or she grows up. And therefore, the Torah was taught first to the mother, because ultimately, they are more responsible in seeing that that process happens because of the initial midas development that they are more involved in than even in the father. But the mitzvah of chinuch and of teaching, that's on the father. But you know something? We sometimes forget and think that today it has been transferred to the school. Now, in a certain sense, it is, because other people, any Talmud Chochem has a responsibility to teach every Jewish child. So in a sense, it is their responsibility too. But we have the primary responsibility. And we have to look at the school as shluchim. They are our agents to educate our children. But we have to bear ultimate responsibility. Now, that means that we can't just rest because we chose a good school for our children and we pay a lot of tuition. It goes way beyond that. We have to be on top of what's happening, what's going on, how are they getting along, how's it going with the friends? How's it going with the Rebbe? How's it going with the administration? What's happening? Is there an incident? Is something a free and open relationship where they're free and comfortable discussing it, and we can therefore keep in touch with everything that's going on? And it's so, so critical. And especially as the sizes of the schools get bigger and bigger, and the sizes of the classes get bigger and bigger, unless we're going to be, for our own children, the official caseworker, that we make sure to see that all of the ingredients are properly coordinated so that they're poised for success, we could end up overlooking some of the most basic and critical needs and problems and situations that our children are going through. We have to be in touch with the school, not to, you know, not to turn them off, you know, breathing down their neck. We have to be in touch. We have to get feedback. It's critical, critical to attend the any conferences or any, you know, any meetings, any opportunities to meet, and to be in touch. A good teacher should be in touch with parents. A good parent should be in touch with teachers. And to listen, listen, listen. And it's good to make our house the central meeting place for the friends, because not only are they in a safer environment, but we get a sense of not only what my kid says, but I hear them talking, I hear the other kids, I see what they're saying. Something's off over here. Something bothers me. What am I going to do about it? So this is, I think, a very, very important thing, because it's our responsibility. The schools share in that responsibility. They help us in that responsibility. They cannot be held. I don't know, maybe they should be held, but it's not practical. With so many students and so many kids in a class, they cannot be held responsible for everything that goes on. But they have to be responsible. We have to hold them responsible. And if something is amiss, have to be able to speak up, not in a way that'll hurt our child, but, and we have to be the advocate for our child. You know, this is, I think in modern Jewish history, it's gone back and forth. There was a time when the Rebbe, the teacher, was always right and the kid was always wrong. And all they had to hear is that something went on, the parent would only have to hear one side, that's it, you know, you're finished. Then there became a tkufa where parents said, you know, the kid is always right, and the school's always wrong. Maybe now, I'm not sure, maybe we're in the middle someplace, you know, maybe we've got a little wiser, nobody is always right, and nobody is always wrong, but we must deal with that issue and be involved and pay serious attention otherwise. And then I'd like to just conclude with one more piece of simple, obvious advice, and then maybe open the floor to some conversation. In today's world especially, and even in previous generations, without Siyata Dishmaya, we don't stand a chance. The distractions, the interference, the negative influences, the pressures, the friends, the exposures. It's too much. It's overwhelming. It's almost miraculous if we survive, if our children survive, with the best schools, with the select neighborhoods, with everything. And we have to constantly turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us. The Rav Aryeh Levine used to advise that in Shmon Esrei every day we should say the words Usehi Mitosi Shelemo Lefonecho. Mitosi, my bed, representing my offspring. My offspring should be Shleimim. Usehi Mitosi Shelemo Lefonecho. Something that we have to constantly and turn to Hashem and hear their problems and turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, help me, this one has this problem, this one has that problem. There's so many problems out there, and we have to recognize that ultimately when there's something that borders on some type of maybe an illness or a mental illness, there's a Reifei Chole Amo Yisrael. And when it's just some general suffering that we have, he's a Shemeya Tfilo. He's a Goyal Yisrael, and we have to turn to him constantly, always. And Reb Matisyahu Solomon tells a story that when he was in Gateshead, there was a bocher in the yeshiva. It was an average bocher, but he always got the best chavrusos every zman. And he couldn't understand it. It didn't make sense, like why he was always zoyche to get the best chavrusas. So one day he's walking by in the hall. In those days they had, I don't know what you call them, anymore, pay phones, you know, these telephone booths or whatever, you know, phones hanging from the wall. You don't even see that anymore. And he hears this kid talking on the phone. He says, "Ma, you could stop davening. I got my chavrusa." Then he knew how the kid was zoyche to get the best chavrusas. We have to do that. It's so, so, so critical in everything that we do. If we want to raise children like that, we need the third partner has to become an active partner from our point of view, involving him, beseeching him, counting on him, relying on him. We have here this piece, very interesting, it's on the table there, there's Moya, on some seven steps for a person to develop bitochon, to be able to trust Hashem. Also have here, I'm going to leave, on the one side it talks about having a more meaningful Yomim Naroim for our children, believe it or not, I don't want to scare anybody, but it's around the corner. And then on the back there's a tefillah for parents for their children, something that could be of interest. We'll leave it here as well. I just want to conclude just one more point. Years ago, there was a real fear and a great stigma about getting professional help. Whether it was, mental health was like, physical, doctors, that people know. You go to a doctor if you have a physical ailment. But mental health was considered a very big stigma. You know, you had to go to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a social worker. I mean, it was like... And there was also a very serious concern that these people would very often, since they're talking with our children, especially the psychologists and the social workers, about issues in life and problems and conflicts and this, they could guide them in certain ways that were not lefi ruchenu, lefi our hashgofa, lefi our way of life. And that was a big danger. So that cut together, the busha with this fear really made that whole profession very much off the charts for most of us. Today that has changed. Number one, it is very accepted. I was going to say it's very fashionable. Probably it is, you know. And secondly, there are today many B'nai Torah who are in the mental health profession who really see things the way we do and can really help lead our children in a more positive direction. However, we must be critical consumers. Just as not every doctor is updated on the most recent developments in medicine, and we search for those that have both more experiences. It's almost a problem. Because the younger ones are more updated, the older ones have more experience. So get somebody in the middle, I don't know. But anyway, But we search it out. We get referrals. We talk to people. Same thing in mental health. We shouldn't assume that just because a person hangs out a shingle of some form of a mental health counselor that this is the one that's going to be able to help us. We have to be critical consumers and make sure that when we make choices like that, that we know who we're sending to and what we can expect. We have a right to interview mental health professionals. We don't have to just accept them. You know, we could talk, well, I'd like to know what you think about this. This is a situation. How do you think you would help? You know, this is all fair game. And one thing I think is also important to mention. There is confidentiality issues that, you know, unless they sign a waiver, and many professionals are very mocked on that, as they should be. But don't forget that you are allowed to tell the professional anything. They may not be allowed to talk to you or to tell you what's going on behind closed doors, but you are allowed to give them whatever information you have to. And sometimes people get confused about that and they withhold, they end all communication just because it's not two-way. But sometimes that input that you give, which is legitimate, can make a difference too. So this is just something else that I think we have to keep in mind. Okay, I think we have a few minutes if anyone has any... Yeah.
Nobody's asking.
I thought maybe we covered it all.
Okay. When you gave the mashal about Avraham Avinu, that Hashem first told him what the benefits were going to be in the okay. case and the night. Now I'm going to talk about something personal. So I have a son who's got 15, loves video games. So when my children were younger, I always set a timer, you have 45 minutes for the night, you're done. As he got older, it got a little harder, and he's like, Mom, I had such a hard day at school, I just want to, like, you know, relax. And it just was a really hard thing, and we explained to him, listen, it's not good, so good for the head, it's not so good for your neshama. You know, all we tried to, like, explain all these different things. We even asked somebody, a professional, just to help us with how to approach it with him. And even the types of games that he was playing, like, to my sensitivities, I wasn't comfortable with, but the professional said it's okay. But he's a very smart child, so like he'll sometimes give me articles from the Wall Street Journal, like, you know, they've done studies, 4 to 6 hours is really okay. And I'm like, what is it? So my question is, how do you deal with it? He's not as smart now, like he's very kind, but how, I gave him the reasons, the explanations, and then handed him, let's call it the night, you know, whatever, so what that?
Well, I think so. First of all, I think the first thing you have to realize is we will not be able to control our children. You know, when I hear a parent say to me, "What? I'm losing control of this kid." I say, at what age did you have control? 6 months? 3 months? You know, a year? You know, so we have to give up on control. And we may have to sometimes say, hey, you know, I have to lose the battle in order to win the war. So that's a judgment call. But I, on the other hand, as much as I would give up on having control, I wouldn't give up on talking to him and negotiating with him. I believe that, it's not a nice word, the nice word is incentivize. The uglier word is bribe. But I believe that that does help. In other words, listen, we respect, and by the way, the more you validate his studies and accept his opinion, the more he will accept your opinion. That's just the way it goes. So I say, listen, we respect what you're saying, we understand what you're saying with this. We still have the feeling that it's dangerous and that it's detrimental and that this and that, whatever you express. And because of that, I guess we'd like to put our money where our mouth is, you know what I mean? And we would like to develop, negotiate with you. With kids, you have to negotiate, you know, and negotiations, the best negotiations are where both parties are a little bit unhappy, but you negotiate. I say, something where we could reduce the hours to give you some incentive. Maybe there's something that you could buy for him which will give him some appreciation or something that he won't need as many hours. And just explain, we are working on this because the same thing if a kid is smoking cigarettes. So you're going to tell the kid, no, you can't smoke, it's detrimental to your health, you know, and these e-cigs, they say, are also, they come out with new studies every day how they're also very, very unhealthy. But it's not going to work. It's a habit. He's addicted. So we have to work gradually, you know, maybe we can cut it down, maybe we could. And the same thing over here, and incentives. Incentives work. Incentives do two things. Number one, they do motivate because there are other things that I want. He does have a life besides the video games. There are things I'm sure that he wants besides the video games. And number two, incentives keep the negotiations going. And once they're still in the parasha of talking about it, there's a chance to cut down. And you have to believe one thing. You can't get discouraged. Just because he didn't get the message yesterday, that doesn't mean he's not going to get it next week. You know, we're very quick to give up, like, you know, because we do feel and we know that our kids have a certain measure of control. I would say it's fair to say that most children have more control over their parents than parents have over their children. I think that's a reasonable statement. It sounds radical, it sounds ridiculous, but to me, it sounds very true. It's very realistic. And therefore, you know, you can't expect to. But on the other hand, don't give up. Work towards it, you know, and you'll succeed. And Hashem puts everything in people's minds. If he wants, he could send him a thought tomorrow and tell him, this is ridiculous. Take the whole thing. I'm throwing it out. I have tinnitus on my parents. How they ever bought it for me in the first place? And, you know, that too could happen. So.
Okay, so it's going to sound like my kid is like the picture perfect child for this question, but the truth is he's not even yet.
He certainly is. I'm sure he is. So is everybody else, so don't feel bad. Yeah,
my question is, like, let's say another child is bullying your child, such as hitting, throwing your child down, pushing your child. You obviously can't parent another parent how to parent their child. So what do you do? Because obviously you have to stand up for your child and do what's best for your child, but at the same time, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to open your mouth to the mother? I mean, kids will be kids at the end of the day, and we all know that.
Well,
but
you still
have to stand up for your child.
Yeah, but do you have to have that opportunity available? Maybe you shouldn't be playing together with that kid. Maybe you could orchestrate something. What?
I mean, most kids will be kids at the end of the day.
So then it was like this. In general, there's a good technique where you talk to the parent, but you tone down. See, we tend to think, the stronger that I talk, the more they'll get the message. It's just the opposite. The softer that I talk, the more they have to strain to listen, and they get the message, and the less they resist. So I would say, our kids are not doing too well together. They're fighting and this, and I'm a little bit afraid that my kid's a little weaker and gets the, gently like this. What can we do about it? And you become partners together. And the other parent doesn't want the kid not to get hurt, and doesn't want the kid to hurt either, because if you nurture a bully, by the time he's in the third grade, in the fifth grade, you're going to have a monster on your hands. So I think but in a gentle way, not that your kid is such a terrible kid. How'd you ever bring such a kid into this world? You'll be ashamed of yourself, What are you doing? I think gradually like that, and get on board, and you make it a joint effort. We're working on this together. It's our problem. I tell parents too, when the kid has a problem, a very therapeutic technique is, we have a problem. If a kid is, even with the drug culture and that, today, smoking weed is so prevalent, you have no idea. You walk in the street, you smell it all over. This is the way of the future. The cigarette industry is almost finished. There's not going to be cigarettes. Everyone's going to be smoking weed. So one of the things that I tell them is, don't talk about the kid that he has a problem, that she has a problem. We have a problem. It's our problem. And once you put it as our problem, you've reframed it as a joint effort, and you've incorporated them on your team. Now, they might be cooperative more, they might be a little bit less cooperative. The kids are certainly not going to cooperate too much at the beginning, but at least we're on the same side. And we've at least taken away one of the barriers which doesn't allow me to listen to you. If you're coming and telling me my kid is the troublemaker, then I don't want to hear what you have to say. But if you say, hey, we got a problem with our kids, they play nicely together, but then after a while, and then you strategize together, and hopefully... And as the kid get older, she'll talk a little to her kid, talk to you. You got to teach your kid to stick up. She got to teach her kid to calm down. And you'll meet in the middle. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's a big thing, but I think the challenge is to find the balance. Like, everything is obviously from Hashem. And we have to include Hashem in everything, and we always have to daven and talk to Him. It's hard sometimes to realize what's ishtadlus and what's too going overboard. In all stages in life, it's hard to find the balance.
Yes. You said right in your introduction. This is a very big issue. this is not a regular achas issue. I think the best contribution I could make to that in one quick comment is that we should realize that hishtadlus and relying on Hashem have nothing to do one with the other. The hishtadlus is because Hashem wants us to live in the natural world, in the natural environment, and to minimize the miraculous. I believe the reason is because He wants to save the schusim that we have for bigger and better things. And when a miracle happens, you're using up certain schusim. But there's nothing to do with it. My ishtadlus, my bitoch, if I have bitoch, it'll happen without ishtadlus. And if I do all the ishtadlus in the world, if I don't trust Hashem, it may not happen. So I think that's one step. At ishtadlus, we have to do normal hishtadlus. For example, what's considered a mokum sakona? Some place, you know, you're not supposed to go in a mokum sakona. So the gedda that Chazal give us is a dover shedoshu bei rabim is not considered a mokum sakona. If everybody does it, if it's the norm to do, it's not a mokum sakona. So same thing over here. It's normal. This is the way people now. Not the norms of crazy people. Not the norms of a deviant society. But the norms of intelligent, educated, caring, loving, dedicated, involved parents. This is the way it's done. So we don't have to go beyond that necessarily. But look at the hishtadlus. This is my mitzvah. It's almost like this. Just like there's a mitzvah to keep Shabbos, there's a mitzvah to daven, there's a mitzvah to take a lulav and an esrog, there's a mitzvah to be mishtadl. It's a mitzvah, so I'm going to do the mitzvah as best I can. I want to figure out, but I don't have to be concerned about, you know, the other thing. It's up to Hashem. He does everything. I have to do my part, and then he'll do his part. And there's much more to discuss about that. There's other differences of opinion, but I think that's a simple rule of thumb which can make it a little bit easier to make those decisions. And when we do our norm and when we do our best, then we just say, listen, I tried my best. I did. And there's nothing as satisfying as I really tried my best. I did what I could. I didn't have to go crazy. I'm not supposed to go crazy. If a parent goes crazy, you're finished. You won't be any use to any of your kids. So, you know. Okay.